Dong.
East Reads West with
Anna Hardy
and Nils von Below.
So I'm looking very much forward to the two books we're going to talk about today, because it's about short time therapy, more or less. So
and dreams and stories.
Yes, stories, a lot of stories. We're talking about Milton Erickson, the therapeutic stories, case stories, and
Michelle Wiener Davis, Change Your Life and Everyone in It, who's about transforming relationship and overcoming anxiety and depression.
You want to start with her biography?
Yeah. What I really like about Michelle Wiener Davis is that we don't know how old she is.
Mm-hmm.
Her age is never never transcribed, and she doesn't give her age. So we only know that she received a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1973. So she should be about my age, born in a little bit older, maybe born in the 60s, in the beginning of 60s or end of 50s. It's interesting. She has she's pretty well known, especially in America. She is one of the big well known therapists, psychotherapists that are pretty prominent in the press. Of course, this comes also because she talked in the Oprah Winfrey Show, which is catapult into stardom. She's written several books about marriage.
Divorce busting, right?
Divorce busting is one of her biggest themes. It's quite interesting because this has roots in her personal life. She said always that she grew up in a Waltonist kind of Walton family kind of background, very idyllic, in New York City. But when she was in high school, her parents divorced after 23 years of marriage, and her mother had been speaking with a therapist for several years, and the therapist said that the differences between her and her husband were not solvable, so divorce was an option. And she's a very big believer of the sanctity of marriage. And one of her main goals of her books is to save relationships.
Yes.
So she's very, very focused on that.
And she started out with a more or less classical approach. Mm-hmm. Like, going back to the childhood.
In psychotherapy.
Yes, mm-hmm. And going back to childhood and traumata and whatever. And at some point she realized that the patients didn't really progress. And so she said that realizing why things happen doesn't necessarily help you to do something else. And so this is why she developed her approach. And she was also inspired by the short time therapy of Milton Erickson, what I'm going to talk about afterwards.
So it's this solution oriented brief therapy she calls SBT.
Yes, SBT, okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. SBT, solution oriented brief therapy. That's her that's her credo.
So I remember that you said I should read this book when I observed that some patients already know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, how can I best help them to get to this knowledge that's already in them? And she also says that something she observes is before the first appointment and the call of the patient in this time in between, things already start to change.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of her first questions. And I think you told me that you also use this when you have a new patient.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of her credo. That's part of her idea, is that that actually with which I really agree, if you have to start changing. Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, look at the title, Change Your Life and Everyone in It. I mean, change is the big thing. And she really focuses on what can you do, on what kind of leverage, what kind of handle can you open and work on so that something changes in your life. And that's something she's really orientated. And the story you just mentioned is that, of course, in the moment the patient calls you, he's already on the path because he's doing something different. So he's on the path. And she then very closely focuses on what is happening between the time the patient called you and the time the patient reaches you. And expanding on that. And I really like this part of her. I really appreciate that because she's so, it's so fascinating how creative she works on these things, yeah, on these solution paths. She does, it's really cool. I really enjoy that.
And did you have eye-opening situations when you work with this question with the first patient?
Yes, but it's I can't tell a story out of my clinic at the moment. But it's what I realized with her is that that working on the solution must be one of the main parts of your therapeutic way. I'm not totally confirmed. I don't go 100% with her that you don't have to look at the past. I don't think that's true. We will go into that first. But what I really liked about her is that she focuses on stagnation. Which is a very Chinese way of looking at people. She focuses on stagnation and looks at what point can you really start getting stagnation out of the system, not out of the system, but how can you get the system out of the stagnation into movement again?
Yes, like avoid doing more of the same.
Yes.
She's a very close observer. She sees that people keep getting into the same situations and they always react the same way. Like, you know, your child isn't doing its homework and you start yelling. And then she tries to find another solution. And sometimes the people have already done it. Like they have reacted in a different way and it worked out. So she says, okay, then why don't you reinforce that sort of behavior?
Yeah. Yeah, and why don't you focus on that and start doing it, repeating it, and seeing? That's something she very nicely focuses on this in this book as well. Is that she tells you, okay, change something, try it out, and try it out for 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, and if it works, good. If it doesn't work, throw it away. Do something different. Change something different. Yeah, and she describes a lot of cases where patients are in a situation, especially in a situation with their partners or with different parts of their family, and she describes them as where something always, as you said, runs in the same pattern, and just think out of the pattern. Yeah, it's really really amazing. Try it out, and if it works, great. And it will change. Which is her credo, that things, when you start to work on a small thing, everything will start to change, which I agree with. It's totally systemic thinking.
Well, you know, we started out in another podcast with the first sentence, Life is Difficult, mm-hmm. By Scott Peck. And she said that, yes, social situations are very complex, but you know, the most successful companies, the 10 most successful companies in the world, what's their secret? Well, in a complex situation, they don't spend time analyzing it down to the roots, but they they do some sort of change. And it can be anything. And then you can see how the system reacts. And this is, for me, it's very logical. In physics, you would also do that with a complex system. Just change one of the parameters and see what happens. I found this amazing because it seems quite simple. You don't really have to understand the whole situation. And this is what we're doing with Chinese medicine treatments.
Absolutely. We work the system.
Yes.
We get an, I mean, I always tell my students, acupuncture is nothing else than getting an impulse into the system and hoping for the reaction.
Yes, and then you can see what happens. And
yeah, he always says, Mamon always says, you put in the needles and you pray, which is exactly that. You put into, you get an impulse and hope out of your experience and what you've been taught and what your teachings and stuff like that, you hope that the movement will happen this and this way. And we know, because systems work in different ways, that this is might be the outcome. But we were never sure. We always, in the situation, we put an impulse and hope that for the best.
Yes, but what you can be sure of is that things will change.
Absolutely.
Sometimes more, sometimes less.
Absolutely.
So this is, yeah.
And coming back to what you said, this kind of what we call craziness is trying to solve a problem with the same instruments in the same way, time, and hoping that there will be a different outcome, which is the definition of being crazy. Yeah. I read in another book on an article this very interesting sentence saying if you're good and if you're smart, you try to create and therapy is trying to create a time lapse between the cause and the impulse which comes out of the cause. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you try to open a time lap in there to give you freedom to react differently.
Well, it's the difference between reaction and responding.
Exactly. And that's where I actually, I'm not 100% with her. I think her therapeutic way is very American. For us as European, is very American. It's very war forward, solution thinking, forward thinking. Great. It's superb. And I'm pretty sure for a lot of things it really works well. But in my therapeutic clinic, I have the experience that patients do bring their rucksack with them. They do bring something with them out of their past, these rucksack and these incidents and these life experience will influence the way they will act, and it will especially influence this aspect between cause and impulse reaction. And because we have this rucksack, we react in a certain way, out of fear, out of trauma, out of whatever. And this, in my experience, this is because our personal experiences influences the way we react. So not looking at it will not help solving the problem. Yeah, we have to look at some of our we have to open this rucksack at a certain time, at certain points, because if we don't, these kind of emotions that we carry in our rucksack, they will flood us in certain situations and make us do the same things over and over again.
Yes. So this is the time maybe to give a hint for the other podcast on Tara Brach.
Yes.
Where she says, okay, be with a feeling, let it be there, let it fully be there, acknowledge it, and then investigate what does it need? What does this vulnerable place most need? And then nurture. Be compassionate. It's not the question why things happened, But how to deal with the emotions that are still present and sometimes very old, most of them very old, actually.
It's a different kind. I'm glad you mentioned this with Tara Brach, but it's exactly, it's a different way of looking at your past. Yeah, just looking at your past and acknowledge is not the focus. Shouldn't be the focus of your therapy. That it's definitely not the aspect of therapeutic doing to focus on the past and see what's happened there and try to answer the why. That doesn't help. But not looking at the past and not acknowledging the past will also not help.
Yes. But this being said, what do you think is most helpful? Like she has lots and lots of questions you can mm-hmm. ask patients, leading questions like what has gone well in your last week?
Exactly.
But what I must admit, I never start a session like that. Mm-hmm. Do you?
No.
But there are people who are very negative and who have this negativity bias, and so they never realize when something good has happened. And this is one of the strategies to reinforce situations or behaviors that have gone well and brought some improvement. What did you find helpful from her technique?
I really I'm of course stuck in the blame aspect, blaming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really like that. She says blaming leads to impotence, keeps us stuck, is blind, is often unjustified, and is hurting. And this comes, this goes hand in hand with the Cartmanian drama triangle, which when you blame, you give away the ability that, or you focus on something that is outside from you. So you give somebody outside, something or somebody outside, the power to manage your emotional life and your life. And that is just not, this is, first of all, it's not really smart in a way, because you give something to somebody which distorts, makes you impotent. But on the other side, it's also in one of the most basic aspects of life, I think, is to understand that we are personally in charge of the emotional life of ourselves. It's our responsibility. We cannot delegate that responsibility to somebody else. You can't delegate it to your partner. You can't delegate it to somebody else. You have to take care of your own emotional life. And it's your decision how you react to certain aspects in life.
And I mean, the second part of her title is to change everyone in your life. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's more in a direct way, indirect way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
She means that you cannot ask another person to change without changing yourself, and that the fact that you're changing your own behavior is going to change the reaction of other people.
Directly.
You cannot say, read this book or go to this therapist or don't you see in what state I'm in, blame people, you know. Doesn't work. It never will.
Yeah, and she. I mean, her one of her sentences: do something different. Yeah. And that's exactly. I mean, I do say that to my patients very often. Do something totally different. Just change it. Don't sit on the sofa when you're after dinner and the kids are in bed. Don't sit on the sofa and switch on the telly. Do something different. Yeah, switch it off. Get a book, go outside, walk. So do something totally different, and it will change. It's like throwing a stone into a pond, and the riddles of the waves, they will change something.
Even to the point of doing something extremely different, which
yes.
she calls the U-turn technique.
Yes. The paradox impulse.
Yeah, do something that your partner or child or whatever would never expect you to do. Just the opposite.
Yeah. That's something she has this wonderful story where a patient went to a supermarket and the child started to scream at the cashier because there were all these sweets and stuff like that, as they usually are. Quengelregal, as the Germans nagging shelf, they call it in German. And the guy just put everything down and sat on the floor with the child and started to not to scream but behave irrational. And she describes it as where she talks to her daughter, I think, and just said the real strange word. Yeah.
Yes, because her daughter never wanted to stop playing or doing something when she needed to pee. Yeah. That was it.
That way, by changing your reaction, you change the whole situation.
By the way, Erickson also does this in a slightly different way. When patients, you know, start telling their story, and you feel that this is the story that they have told many times before. It's always the same narrative, mm-hmm. and you don't think that they're going to learn anything new, and you as a therapist neither. Mm-hmm. It's just a story they've been telling about who they are and what they are. And then he interrupts them and says, yes, I also like snow in winter. Or I also like ice cream or mm-hmm. whatever. And it really throws them off their path. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a quite creative way to deal with these stories, or also with a behavior that's always the same.
Yeah, it's a very nice way of getting an impulse into your life. So if you have patients who are stuck, if you have patients who are unable to move on, I think this is a very good book for them to read and to explain to them that this way it will get an impulse into them. And for us therapists, it's a very straight way focus on positive change, which I really like. It's for Europeans, I think it's interesting that there are aspects in there that are very US American. Because they're very focused on certain conflicts with the children and certain abilities to succeed in the American way of life that we don't have in that. So there are conflicts in there that we don't have in Germany, but or in Europe. But still, it really helps you to change your way of looking.
Yes. Yeah?
And especially we Germans, we are totally focused on this, on the negative side. And that's what I really like about her. That's what I like about the Anglo-Saxon way of teaching and the Anglo-Saxon way of working is think positive, not positive, but think forward. Yeah, try something else, do something different, get out of your routines. Yeah.
But there are two very important advices, I think. Mm-hmm. One is do nothing. Being a hyperactive problem solver allows others to put off working things out. If you find yourself taking the lead to resolve a given situation by taking a deep breath and doing nothing next time it occurs.
It's great because it's something I had to learn the hard way in my clinic. I tended to be the problem solver. And now I try to bring in creativity, but try to bring patients to create the solutions themselves much more.
And sometimes it really helps, you know, taking a deep breath and just waiting and looking at them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they go on and start saying something helpful. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is you have to learn to pick and choose your battles. In regard to relationships, intentional overlooking the less important issues in the livelihood of long-lasting, meaningful relationships, for instance, or deciding to do nothing should be on your short list of options. Yeah.
John Gottman, in his book, Seven Principles of Successful Marriages, mm-hmm. he's very clear about mm-hmm. this. It's quite interesting. It's I think John Gottman is a good addition to Michelle Weiner-Davis, because he's much more specific, and he also distinguishes between solvable and unsolvable problems.
Yes.
And I really like that way of looking things. Yeah. So she's not so clear about it, but that's okay. It's not all encompassing. Yeah.
How is it called how to make a marriage work, right?
Right. Seven okay. principle how to make a marriage work.
Yes. So you can listen to that podcast too.
Yeah.
Okay. And one thing I also like is that in the end, she has sort of follow up questions to see if you have accomplished what you wanted, what has worked out, what is still desired, and how you have tried to do it. And sometimes she says, well, maybe you have to change your strategy. But, you know, sometimes people are on a good way. They're making progress, and then they stop working and they fall back into behavior, and they say, oh, and it hasn't worked on the whole. And that's not true. They have already accomplished something. Yeah. I have made an excerpt of all the helpful questions, and I think I should maybe should give them as a download.
Yeah.
So. It's because for me also I realize that I've forgotten most of her advice.
Yeah.
But it's really important, so. But anyway, I don't talk so much to my patients, not anymore, since I do this new kind of hypnotic approach.
Okay.
I talk to them in another way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realize that I'm not so good at talking.
Which is not true, Anna. You just refocus. You're great in talking.
Yeah, but maybe not to my patients. I don't know.
Can't tell. I'm not part of your... Talk to your supervision.
I'm great at listening.
Yes. Which is most important, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
But if that brings us on to Milton H. Erickson and his teachings and his stories.
Oh yeah, let me tell you something about his biography, because I think it's very influential for
absolutely.
What he has done. So he was born in 1909, and he was the second of nine children. His father was a Norwegian immigrant, and his mother came from a distinguished New England family. A formative experience was his contracting polio at age 19, so he was already quite old, and he barely survived. So he fell into a coma for 3 days, and when he regained consciousness, he was paralyzed over the entire body. So during this time, he trained his capacity of careful and detailed observation. And this you find in all his case studies, that he really is a very good observer. And so how did he regain his mobility? Well, he started to imagine that he could move his muscles again. And then he was able to walk on crutches after a year. He began studying medicine and psychology at the University of Wisconsin. And he was married twice and had 8 children. Mm-hmm. And he also talks about his children in his case studies. He became best known for his work on hypnosis. And unlike Freud, he developed an approach individualized for patients. So trance for him is a state that everyone has experienced. It's not something you really have to induce, although he knows some techniques. He doesn't mention them in the book, but he describes trance also as a state of daydreaming, meditation, or jogging, which is meditation in motion. So these are situations in which one is aware of the vividness of inner mental and sensory experiences. The trance is intended to enable the patient to mobilize unconscious self-healing powers and to use creative resources.
It's interesting, his use of trance and his wording, because he is using the old wording of trance. I remember Tara Brach in her Radical Compassion. She also talks about trance, but in her in her, how she uses this word, is trans isn't really something positive.
No, it's the trans of unworthiness. It's the inner critic speaking, and you even don't notice it because you're on autopilot.
Exactly. Well, that's what she, is this autopilot situation that she describes as trans. So, so for her, trans is something that where you just function. Yeah, it's the functional situation. And I really, it's interesting because from a psychotherapist view, it's trans from Erikson is actually the go-to guy when it goes to trans.
Yeah, so this is also the technique I'm now learning, you know, and I was quite amazed when I read it again to what to notice and how closely I should observe my patients in order to see the reactions and make use of this inner wisdom. Yes, I was quite surprised that after, I don't know, a year, I rediscovered something.
Oh, that's cool. I really enjoyed, and that's something where he goes together with Michelle Weiner Davis. One of my favorite stories in here is the story about the horse that comes to his to his farm, and he tells the story where the horse comes to this farm and has no brand mark, so he doesn't know who he belongs. The horse belongs. So what he does, he just sits on him and lets him ride, because he's pretty sure that he will find his way home. And I really like it. It's almost a biblical story in a way, because it really comes together with, it's the same focus as Michelle Weiner Davis that says focus on the part where in the time between the call and what has changed between the call the patient calls you and the time he has this date with you. And is this feeling and this this idea that the solution lies in the patient.
Yes, but I think he's sort of intervening more. Milton Erickson.
Milton Erickson is intervening more, but still he sees himself as the rider. So he sees himself as the guy who is going with the horse and not so much guiding the horse, but making sure it doesn't start. The horse doesn't start eating at the fields, or it just keeps on moving. So it's he sees his role more in keeping the patient on the move.
Yes. And he has a very creative approach. So maybe I can give you a few examples. So he says, like, forget about textbook knowledge, because it prevents you from opening yourself to the individual patient and being curious to what kind of person he or she is. And then meet the patient in his own frame of reference. Find out what is important to him and what motivates him, and make use of it in the therapy.
That's something Yalom also says in the Panamahut.
Yeah.
Each patient has its own story.
Yes, and his own language also.
So each therapy must be individual.
It must be, yes. And this is a very Chinese approach.
Absolutely.
Like for herbal medicine, you don't give the same formula to every patient with a cold, for instance. So he also has methods to help patients break out of mental patterns. So he says much of our learning is based on instructions that prevent us from developing and understanding ourselves. And how can we get out of these confining, you know, mentally confining also beliefs? And so he has interesting methods to help people break through these prohibitions. So he confuses them, he surprises them with completely unexpected and sometimes drastic statements or shocking behavior. Like, you know, the supermarket story, he once did it in psychiatry with a patient called Ruth, a girl of 12 maybe. She had very aggressive behavior, and he helped her destroy her room and attack a nurse. I mean, everybody knew beforehand that he was going to do that. But then this little girl, she was shocked. But Dr. Erickson, you cannot do that.
Exactly.
Yes, because somehow he mirrored her what she was doing. It was very important for her to learn.
It's, I haven't read another story where he tries to get a guy to eat again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he creates situations. He created situation. He started by getting him to drink again by his own because he was always nose fat, and he tried to, because he said he couldn't drink and eat because he couldn't swallow, and he started by getting him thirsty, and putting a glass of water in him. So he created situations where patients had to react in a way different than before.
And he sent this patient to the wood, and he said, "Okay, now you chop this wood." And in the evening, he told him to go to the farm, and the cook in the farm was a woman, quite obese, and she really liked eating. And he instructed her to not to eat the whole day, so that she would be really hungry in the evening, and to cook her favorite dish and a large amount. Double of what she thinks she would like to eat. And then she sat down to eat and had a very good appetite. And this guy, he had worked all day and was in the cold. And so he saw this woman eating with so much appetite. And I think he got hungry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He started eating.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So he's a very playful and creative approach. And he says that he likes to play with his patients and also teach the patients to play themselves. Mm-hmm. Like an instrument, more or less. I don't know how much you could copy this method, because it's also very much related to Milton Erickson's personality.
I think in a way the stories he tells is an inspiration of thinking your own, coming up with your own stories. And looking at life and what people tell you from a new perspective, yeah, and trying to broaden the focus. Yeah, I mean, that's something that we practitioners and therapists always have to do anyway. And as Chinese practitioners, we broaden the focus by bringing in something that is unknown for the patients normally, by bringing in our Chinese knowledge. So by looking from the Chinese point of view, we look at the problem from a different angle and therefore bring in different solutions to solve the problem. And what he by creating these stories, by talking about these observations, he tries to it's like a lens. He tries to open the lens and says, okay, look at it differently. Look at the different colors, look at the different aspects of this story, and how can you use that for your patient?
Yeah, sometimes I remember when I was reading this book, I was riding my bike to my clinic, and I thought, well, what fun can I have today? and it was a completely different mood. Sometimes I go to the clinic and I'm maybe not in such a good energetic condition. So I think, oh, I don't know if I can take the responsibility, if I can help. And, you know, having a playful approach is much nicer. I'm still serious about what I'm doing, but, you know.
Well, it's a different swing.
Yes, it's really different.
So, I mean, we couldn't describe all the stories that is in the book, because there are so many of them. But it is absolutely worth reading, because he gives you out of his... He's very down to earth. He's very rural in a way.
Yes.
Yeah? And he's very, very connected to a very earthy kind of life, which I really like. And he's like Yalom in a way, very direct and very clear cut, which I really like. Brutal would be sometimes the right word.
Yes, sometimes it's brutal. But he also, you know, he says patients have the right to keep their symptoms.
That's right, yeah.
So if the change they would have to make is more painful than what they're experiencing right now, like I remember a story of a patient with migraines, and so he had him under hypnosis. He asked him what he was thinking was the cause, or and then he said that his wife had an extramarital relationship. He knew about unconsciously, but he didn't want to realize it on the conscious level. And this conflict kept him having headaches. And well, it would have been more painful to realize that his marriage was a mess and he would have to do something against it. So he opted for the migraines.
Although he can be brutal, I like the way that he's always also focused on the patient.
Yes.
Yeah, and on the story, but in a different way.
In a different way, yeah.
Cool. That was Milton Erickson.
Yes.